So there's a better solution. Well, why don't you get to the better solution? Because you don't trust each other, you don't level with each other, and quite frankly, it's easier just to say, look, you're at 10 and I'm at 7, let's settle it at 850 or something like that, and that's what they do, as opposed to really trying to figure out, hey, how about if we did this, and how about if we did that, and so on, and there might be a better deal somewhere along the line. Any comments on that? Okay. Yes?
Were you trying to get to the point where the manufacturer would actually own the inventory on a customer's site through a distributor?
Well, that certainly would reduce costs.
There's only one problem that my point is, I used to work for a distributor that was big in integration. And if the manufacturer, Seco, owned the product, and it was in a distributor's vending machine in the customer's facility, the distributor, since they don't own the inventory, doesn't care what the terms are. Therefore, it would be Seco's responsibility in that region to manage those terms for the distributor, and it really complicates.
There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that implementing it would be very difficult, but I believe that it could be done. And I believe that you could get a distributor that you could trust, and you could get a customer you could trust. You could have some kind of relationship like that.
Where if the terms weren't where they were agreed upon in the distributor.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you'd have to have stuff where it was worthwhile to the manufacturer to do it. But you could make an argument that, hey, a manufacturer's job is to manufacture the stuff, not to get involved in all this kind of stuff. But I often said that we should have some kind of software that we sell to our distributors to manage inventory. An arm of the business would be a software business, because I think the logistics is such a major part of this whole thing working. And, you know, when it was GE, I thought, hey, there's enough money here. We could figure out how to do that and sell software to manage cribs, like, you know, maybe buy a company that has some kind of cribware or something like that. And then we could have, you know, the thing, we could be actually piped in through the internet to every single insert around the whole United States, which, you know, yesterday Chris was talking about having to drive all back down Ohio and back last night, you know, because, you know, some inserts are somewhere. You know, those inserts are sitting somewhere in the country. We just don't know where they are. So some kind of software system that was like an online thing and like a global thing, you could find out where the inventory was at all times. You know, but that's, you might say, diversionary for making tools. But, you know, we're not here to get through all this kind of stuff. So just give you some food for thought. Okay. Now, in terms of how, and a number of you on your surveys, you said, well, you wanted to know what's the right way to work with distributors and the right way to motivate them. And my answer to that from a global perspective is understand where the distributor's making their money and where they're losing their money. Just, you know, try to walk around. And if you got one that's very successful, you know, look around and find out what they're doing. Go to a distributor that's doing it right and try to get an understanding of where they're doing it. And then maybe you can help a distributor that's not doing it so well. But this is how it should work, in my view, if everything was cool. This circle here represents the distributor's resources. This represents the manufacturer's resources. And this is the customer, this circle here. Where are you in this? Okay, you guys are the manufacturer, so let's make that really clear. That's you guys. You're the manufacturer. So, and like I said, in San Diego, I had this going on with Terry Davis. It was perfect. Terry spent most of his time on his own, working on his customers or our customers or whatever. He spent time working on one of my customers, and this is the time he spent on my customers, this time in here. I spent time alone in my customers this amount of time, and we worked together in the customer this amount of time, and this amount of time he and I worked together just planning, like a dinner or breakfast or something like that. This is the way it should work. Now, up in Los Angeles, you know, I worked with Tony, and I really loved Tony. We used to go down to the beach and have lunch, but it wasn't a real effective use of our time. We could have been more effective if we didn't spend time making a four-legged call, which is what they call when two guys go in and do the job of one. So there's a little graphic, if you will, about working with your distributors. Are there any questions on that? Another thing that comes up quite a bit is a term called cash flow. And cash flow is no big deal to understand at all once somebody explains it to you. If you haven't had it explained to you, then it becomes more of an issue. There's also cash flow after taxes and things of that nature. It can get more complicated. Anybody that's got rental properties know what I mean about cash flow after taxes. If you take into consideration, if you have rental properties, one of the most attractive things about rental properties is that you can depreciate your property, the buildings, not the land. You can depreciate them, which becomes an expense, but you don't pay any money for that expense. So, but the government changed that, the rules. It used to be you could do 10-year depreciation. Now it's for 27 and a half years if you're talking about houses. So if you spend $100,000 on a house, you could take basically $4,000 as a deduction each year or something like that. All right, here's an example. Let's say John Mitchell decides he's leaving SECO and he's taking his $40,000 and he's going to start a company,